This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Wednesday, April 28th, 2021. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney, working from my home studio in New York. And Taylor, we start with this. Did you see the ratings for Sunday Night Baseball the other day?
Of course I saw the ratings. I'm a company man, Buster. What do you think this is?
And I'm very excited. And I, you know, a lot of thanks to fans who are tuning in. I look, the numbers are outstanding so far. The games have been averaging more than 1.7 million viewers, which is up 38% compared to the pandemic shortened 2020 season, 7% over 2019. And let's face it, we've been really lucky. We had Shohei Ohtani in that first Sunday night game. We had Ronald Acuna Jr. putting on a show the second week. We had that controversial play at the plate that week. You had Anthony Rizzo being mic'd up, and he was tremendous with that. And then we had that crazy Padre-Dodger game. So we've been lucky with the games, but pretty cool that folks are tuning in.
Absolutely. And you'd have to think that really it's on the back of the podcast and us promoting Sunday Night Baseball so heavily this season. That's what I tell myself anyway.
Well, it's kind of built in, right? When I'm the host of this show, that we're going to be talking about Sunday Night Baseball a lot. But it was cool. And I mean, folks who are tuning in, I really appreciate it. The interest, it's been fun so far this year. All right, news and notes of the day. Jerry Blevins, longtime left-handed reliever, announced his retirement after 13 big league seasons on Tuesday night. He played with a number of teams, had a lot of success, including this. I looked this up this morning, faced 22 batters in the postseason, and only one of those reached base. The St. Louis Cardinals placed catcher Yadier Molina on the 10-day injured list on Tuesday because of a tendon strain in his right foot. The Giants acquired outfielder Mike Tauchman from the Yankees at a time when it really is beginning to look like the Yankees are open to making changes. In return, the Giants gave up left-handed reliever Wandy Peralta. Tauchman had a really nice 2019 season, but he just hasn't been the same since. And we're going to be talking about some of those changes with the Yankees coming up here with Dave Schoenfield. Let's get to the good stuff. Nolan Arenado demonstrating his defensive excellence.
Shift on for Harper. Hits a fly ball. Left side, Arenado racing after it. Oh, he got it! Oh, what a play! Nolan Arenado with his back to the infield. The shift was there. Long way to go. Nolan being Nolan.
Catching the ball with a sweep of his glove. That from the Cardinals television network. He is outstanding. Braves and Cubs. Ronald Acuna Jr. continues to put on a show.
2-2. Swung on. Hit high and deep to left. There you go. He was due. 1-0 Atlanta. High and deep to left center. Acuna just launched his 8th.
That from 680, the fan, that home run measured at 481 feet. Ian Anderson was terrific. He is the only pitcher over the last 100 seasons with three starts of at least 6 innings pitched and one or no hits allowed in his first 11. I think that would be runs allowed in his first 11 career games. Absolutely tremendous effort by him. The Red Sox and Mets, score was tied 1-1, top of the 6th inning.
The pitch, swing and a little line drive into left field. That's a blooper. It's going to fall in front of Smith for a hit. Hernandez to third. He is waved home. He will score. It's an RBI single for Rafi Devers. A jam job gives the Red Sox a 2-1 lead.
And that would be the final score. That call from WEEI. Indians and Twins. And Franmil Reyes had himself a day.
Reyes swings and hits it. Deep to left. Forget about it. Another rocket. And Reyes has his second home run tonight. 7 on the year. And the Indians have a 4-3 lead.
The unmistakable voice of Tom Hamilton on WTAM. But you know what? Franmil Reyes was outdone last night by Vladdy Guerrero Jr.
Swing and a drive. Get up, ball. Get out of here. How about a 3-homer?
Well, he found the ball he wanted to hit. You know what's would have been the most impressive thing about what he has done tonight? The grand slam went to left. The solo home run went to center. And this one's going to go to right.
Blue Jays beating the Nationals 9-5. That, of course, the call from Buck Martinez, Sportsnet 590. The Reds and the Dodgers reeling, having lost 3 of 4 to the Padres over the weekend, having lost to the Reds in the first game of this series. LA held a lead in the seventh inning. Two runners on base, Joey Votto at the plate.
Rifled down the line. This very well may give the Reds the lead. Votto's headed to second with a two-run double, and it's 6-5 Cincinnati.
Joe Davis with the call on the Dodgers television network. The Dodgers lose again, and we're going to be talking with Dave about that coming up. Major League Baseball will consider expansion fees in the range of $2.2 billion for new franchises, although there are no current plans to add teams. Commissioner Rob Manfred spoke Tuesday during Sportico's live online discussion of its estimates to baseball franchise valuations. Now, before we get to Dave and to Paul Imbakides, baseball is back, and so are your favorite teams and players. Catch the best of the bigs all season on ESPN Plus with more than 170 live MLB games featuring every star and every team in the league. Sign up now at ESPNPlus.com/baseball. And this week on Fantasy Focus Baseball, Eric and Tristan wonder if the Braves or the Diamondbacks deserve more credit for the historic doubleheader and if Jacob deGrom would be redrafted number one overall. Plus, schedules and bullpens, they've got you covered. Follow Fantasy Focus Baseball wherever you get your podcasts.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to the show!
Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show, mate.
Welcome to the show. Whoa!
Welcome to the show, baby.
You're in the show with David Schoenfield.
David Schoenfield, who covers baseball for ESPN. And Dave, I had it. You probably remember a writer, a longtime writer for the New York Post named Tom Keegan, who I followed at the Baltimore Sun. Great guy, had a great sense of humor. And when he became a columnist at the Post, his signature column was, "It's time to panic." So, like, if the Mets lost, like, you know, 4 out of 5 at the beginning of the year, he would write that column, "Is it time to panic?" And I'd always say that to him in the years that followed, if the Yankees or the Mets were going badly. And I laughed this morning because I was thinking about the Dodgers. And that's my question to you. Is it time to panic if you're the Dodgers?
2-7 over their last 9. I'm sure Dodgers fans are panicking. I remember us on this show last week or 2 weeks ago talking about the Dodgers as a all-time super team.
Who suggested that?
Who said that 2 weeks ago? I'd like to point out that my 2001 Mariners never went 2-7 over 9 games. Look, I'm not that worried. The bats have really been dead. They've hit 177 over these nine games. Mookie Betts and others, you know, not really hitting. But, you know, look, they're not going to run away with things, at least in the first half of the year. You know, that seems clear at this point, right? The Giants are there. The Padres are going to be there. Even the Diamondbacks maybe are better than we thought. So, yeah, hey, at least it's going to be interesting.
I would say this. I think they'll come back, and I think they'll dominate, and they'll wind up winning the division handily. You know, will they get bounced back and win 111 games like the – or 114 games like the 98 Yankees yeah. did? You know this well. The Yankees started, what, 1-3, 1-4 that right. year in 98, and then they had another slide in September, and they still managed to win a high number of games. And the Dodgers' rotation is so good
yeah.
that, you know, they're going to win a lot. I would say a couple things. Mookie Betts, when we had him on Sunday Night Baseball the other day, he must have gotten like five pitches in the zone where he fouled fastballs back or hanging off speed stuff. And you could see the look in his face like, really? Like, are you kidding me? And you know there's going to be a time when he's going to get his timing back because he's dealt with some injuries this spring and he'll be fine. And Cody Bellinger is making progress and he'll come back. And so I think eventually they'll hit. The one thing I would say that this stretch has sort of exposed is they're going to need some more bullpen depth. And, you know, Corey Knebel went down the other day. Dave Roberts is talking about him being, you know, out for probably 6 to 8 weeks at least. They do think he's going to pitch again this year, but you just don't know exactly what's going on there. And with Kenley Jansen, he's looked good for the most part when he's pitched, but they've now built in this situation where they're giving him a couple days off between appearances, which I think necessitates them getting more depth.
Yeah, you know, and they have Joe Kelly. He's starting to throw at the alternate site, you know, so they'll get him back, it looks like, relatively soon. But, yeah, then David Price just went on the IL, you know, and they thought they had added enough depth to that bullpen, but it tells you how quickly you lose two or three arms down there. And even as good as the Dodgers starters are, you still burn through relievers very quick. And I'm with you, not using Kenley back-to-back. You know, I thought that cost them the game Sunday night. You know, he'd thrown 23 pitches the night before, but they didn't want to use them. So that complicates things, and it means the other guys have to step up. And, yeah, the rest of that pen has not done it so far.
So a great night last night from Vladimir Guerrero Jr. doing something his father never did, hitting three homers in a game. And look, he has really taken a step forward this year after working like crazy on his conditioning the offseason. Tip of the cap to him. That last home run he hit last night to right field, that one, when I saw the replay of that, I'm like, oh, my God, the absolute strength of somebody to hit a ball with that swing to that part of the ballpark was remarkable to me. Which is,
yeah, that was, no, it was great. And that was the hardest fastball, 97 miles an hour, he's ever hit for a home run in his career. And I don't know about you, Buster. I think this gets back to his conditioning. I was looking up some numbers. His first 2 years against pitches 95 plus, he was under 200. He did struggle against elite velocity. Small sample size this year, but he's 5 for 11. He hit that home run. He's drawn some walks. You know, whether this is just adjustments or if it is, you know, losing the 40 pounds, the bat maybe is a little quicker and he's turning and getting around on those high speed fastballs.
And he's an impact player now, yes?
Yeah, look, you know, I think so. Look, he has the pedigree. He has the scouting report coming up. And he wasn't bad his first 2 years. He was still above average. He just wasn't Juan Soto or Ronald Acuna Jr., but you look at the stat line now, I think so. More walks than strikeouts, the chase rate going down, and like I said, he's hitting the velocity. I think this is the Vlad Jr. we all expected.
So some really interesting developments with the New York teams yesterday. First, the Yankees. I think it's really clear that after they lost that game to the Orioles the other day, you know, after seemingly beginning to build momentum against the Cleveland Indians, they lose on Monday, and then on Tuesday we find out that Kyle Higashioka is now going to be potentially the number one catcher for the Yankees. They're not casting it that way, but it's pretty clear now that Gary Sanchez, batting 182, 617 OPS after struggling the last weeks of spring training, The catcher position is open as far as the Yankees are concerned. That is a significant change because Gary Sanchez has been one of those guys who he was always basically assured of being in the starting lineup whenever he was healthy. And that is not the case. And on top of that, we had the situation last night. Aaron Judge had to come out of the game. Aaron Boone told reporters afterward that Judge is kind of beaten up. He's got some lower body soreness. He wasn't specific about that. He talked about how he may have to sit out the next few days. This, and they trade Mike Tauchman also to the Giants. This definitely feels like that the Yankees now are in a position where, like, you know what, this group, it's not working and we're open to change.
No, and you watch them a lot. I watch them a lot living here in Connecticut. And, you know, they simply have not looked good. They look vulnerable. We've talked about this. I was surprised they didn't move on from Sanchez in the offseason. Yep. So I'm not surprised at all by this, especially Higashioka. I think he has a 1,200 OPS. He's hit some in the minors, and he's doesn't have a great arm, but, you know, he's probably a better all-around catcher than Sanchez. So that move makes total sense. I don't quite get why they traded Tauchman with Judge beat up here temporarily. Look, they're going to have to step up, but who are you relying on now? Clint Frazier, Brett Gardner? Your second-tier players are going to have to produce because the pitching is not going to carry this team.
Well, and it feels like that, look, if Gary Sanchez is not going to hit, then there's not really a reason to have him in the lineup. And the fact that they sat him down yesterday makes me wonder as we move forward if Brian Cashman, the general manager, because you're right. You and I talked during the offseason about how there was some surprise that the Yankees didn't move on past Sanchez. I think I related the story talking with an evaluator with another team saying, you know what, they're being stubborn. Like they are not admitting that this is just not working. If the Yankees are to that point, then I wonder if in the weeks ahead we're going to hear about them talking about making a deal for a catcher, specifically some left-handed hitting catcher. And I do think there are going to be a lot of players available in trade this year because there are only 10 playoff berths.
And that's a great point because that lineup is still very right-handed. You know, they took a flyer on Jay Bruce. That didn't work. Rougned Odor, that's not going to work. He can't hit. They could really use another left-handed bat.
Boy, the timing of this for Aaron Judge, too, having to sit down, it really feels like such a crucial year for him to demonstrate to the Yankees that he can stay in the lineup and he can stay healthy. Because that's been the issue in recent years. And they are quickly moving toward that crossroad when they have to decide whether or not to invest long term in him.
That's a great point because you look on his rate basis stats and his, you know, war per 150 or whatever. He's one of the top five players when he's healthy in the game. Power on base, great defense, but he just can't stay on the field long enough. Yeah, if you're the Yankees, how could you think about investing long term, $200 million or whatever in this guy? I don't think you could do it.
Not until he demonstrates that he can stay on the field.
That means probably two healthy years, right? Or at least play 145 or whatever this year,
Yep, exactly. Francisco Lindor traded to the Mets during the offseason. A lot of excitement for Mets fans about the acquisition. He got booed yesterday. Yep. And having worked in New York for a long time, having seen what happened with Alex Rodriguez, having seen what happened with Giancarlo Stanton, I'm telling you, this is the potential to be a thing.
And I know in the New York thing, you've been there long enough. I think it sometimes gets over exaggerated, but it's there. Playing in New York, it's different, and I know they're not dealing with, 150 media members in the clubhouse after every game, but that big contract, new team, a lot of pressure on that team to do well. Because he is struggling. The one positive, the contact rate is great. He's not chasing, so the basics of his approach are fine. Buster, he's just not driving the ball. I've watched the Mets more than any other team this year. And look, they've had a weird schedule. They've had some rain outs, some snow outs, So I don't think they've played 4 or 5 days in a row all year. So maybe that's factored in, but it just looks like a guy who's pressing.
I agree with you. And I do think there's something to the whole rhythm of the season and them not being able to consistently play without having a lot of those snow out, rain outs. Look, I don't cover the team on a daily basis, so I don't know how much he's been made available. If I were advising him, I would tell him, look, if you go 0-for-4 and you get booed in a situation like this, then go do a Zoom call. You know, I mean, you pointed out that you don't have reporters in clubhouses. And so if you're a player who is inclined to not want to talk to media members after a rough game, it would be easy to hide. I think right now it's incredibly important for him to get out there every day because he got this huge contract, $341 million. They invested in him to be the face of the franchise, and he needs to express himself, the frustration, whatever he's feeling, and to be out front as opposed to not talking with reporters. I think it's important for him to do this in New York because this is the cement has been poured, and now it's the question is, how is it going to harden? And this time will go a long way toward defining him for sure.
That's a really good point. I get all those emails from the Mets on their Zoom calls. And yeah, I don't remember seeing Lindor on there, you know, certainly not anytime recently. And yeah, whether that could lead towards the media turning against you, the New York media, it's not as vicious as it used to be. But, you know, there's a lot of them. And some of them, if you don't talk to them, they might turn against you a little bit. You know, of course, if he starts hitting, everything changes. But yeah, you got to own up to it. You are the face of that franchise along with Jacob deGrom. And with that comes responsibility of talking to the press.
And I want to make it clear, I have no indication that the Mets are hiding him or that Lindor is hiding. But in these weird circumstances where the reporters are not in the clubhouse, I think it would be important for him to go to the media relations people and say, look, you know, make me available.
Right.
If I have a bad game, let make me available. Yesterday, we got word Rob Manfred speaking out loud about expansion, which you and I know is inevitable. You know, once they get the CBA signed and the financial landscape, I think, is more settled, you knew that at some point the other owners are going to want to cash in this big ticket. And that is a big ticket when he's talking about $2.2 billion is a price tag for an expansion franchise.
You got $2 billion to put a team in Charlotte or Nashville, Buster, right? You spent some time in Nashville back in the day.
Burlington, Vermont. You know, we lost our Class A team, our rookie league team, so maybe we can put one up there.
I mean, the other thing he said, of course, is they got to figure out, you know, the stadium situations with the A's and the Rays, which none of those. There's a little light at the end of the tunnel in Oakland. I don't see any in Tampa Bay in the foreseeable future. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I would put, you know, Charlotte probably number one in my book. You know, they've mentioned Portland, Oregon. Portland doesn't even have a minor league team. And being from the Northwest, I would not bank on Portland supporting a major league baseball team. Just my gut instinct could be wrong. You know, there's some money there, decent population, Montreal. But Tampa Bay is still saying they want to do this Tampa Bay Montreal thing down the road. Las Vegas, you know, that's a possibility. Maybe Austin or San Antonio, but we'll see. But it's going to happen at some point.
And I want to point out that there was a blue ribbon panel formed to look into the Oakland Stadium situation, and that panel was formed in 2006. Okay, so that has been longstanding issues with those two franchises and their ballparks. I'm completely biased because I lived in Nashville for 8 years. I went to school there. I've got friends there. I absolutely think that place would be ripe for a major league city. And I know I've talked to a lot of folks at the executives at the team level who believe that that would be one of the teams. Because, and it's interesting, when you look at each of these teams, of course, own territories. And when you look at where the teams are, it's like Nashville is perfectly placed, right in the center between Cincinnati and Atlanta and St. Louis. It's this wonderful, there's distance with all of those cities. It seems like an absolute natural to me.
Yeah, and it's one of those cities that's really exploded, you know, the last 20 years. You know, obviously you have the music scene, but economically it's thriving, you know, so you want people that have money to spend to go to these games. And I'm with you, it could become a regional franchise for that area of the country.
Yeah, and Vegas is interesting to me. You know, it'd be interesting to see how the perception of that place. I think the one reason why Portland, Oregon, or Vancouver, British Columbia might be interesting is because when you look at the divisions, there is a need for a team in the Mountain West time zone to even out the division. You know, because we're obviously headed toward that time when we're going to have 16 teams in each league, divisions of four teams. And you do need probably another team out in the mountain or the West time zone, which is why I think Las Vegas might get some extra consideration.
Yeah. And we've seen, you know, the NHL go there, the NFL go there. So, you know, there's money, there's tourists. So I don't know about playing baseball in the middle of July in Las Vegas, but I guess they'll figure that out. Dome Stadium, maybe.
Exactly. All right, Dave, thanks for doing this.
All right. Thanks, Buster.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Jumping into the numbers. This is Hembo Knows on Baseball Tonight.
Hembo, Paul Imbakides, researcher at ESPN, who has become kind of a wingman, Hembo, on Mike Greenberg's radio show in the morning. I've been listening. Every Tuesday, I have to drive my home COVID test over to FedEx. And so I was listening to you yesterday, and I got to say, man, I didn't realize like the level at which you're Mr. Old School.
I'm one of the very few people that I think that exists that really, really enjoy the use of analytics, but also really enjoy baseball's archaic, unwritten rules. And the context for our discussion yesterday was over the weekend in Los Angeles when Fernando Tatis hit a couple homers off of Trevor Bauer, pimped both of them and essentially mocked Trevor Bauer in doing so. And I guess I wasn't surprised to hear Trevor Bauer's reaction, because those are the rules with which, you know, he uses in terms of, you know, his on-field celebrations and his sort of Twitter presence and all of that. But it sort of rubbed me the wrong way. I'll just be totally honest. And I bet you there are players on that Dodgers team that don't feel the same way that Trevor Bauer does about Tatis showing him up the way that he did.
I would say this. I you said it kind of rubbed you the wrong way. I got the strong impression that if you had been on the mound, if you were Trevor Bauer, that Fernando Tatis Jr., there's no doubt you would have thrown at him next time up.
And I think if, you know, for the first 150 years of baseball history, absolutely true. Yes. So here's what I would say. For the first 150 years of baseball history, that has been true. And there's a good reason for it, Buster, because Fernando Tatis was awfully comfortable in the box, right? And it's, I think Joe Morgan once said, like, hitting a baseball is really hard. It's a lot harder if there's fear involved. And it's very clear if Fernando Tatis is hooking breaking balls on the outer half that he's leaning in such a way that he should have taken one up and in. Whether or not he hits him is another story. But there's a certain strategy of pitching that I think goes into it too. It's not just that, you know, he should essentially pay for his, you know, pay atonement for the mistake of showing me up. It's also, let's make sure this guy's not this comfortable in the box next time he comes up. There's a piece of that too that I think is often missed in today's game with throwing inside.
Taylor, you're listening to all this and you just heard Hembo talk about it. What do you think?
Hembo, come on, man. Like, let's loosen it up a little bit. Who cares? This is so silly. I'm so tired of this conversation already.
But here's the thing, Buster. There's a place in the game for people that feel the way that Taylor does and a place in the game that feel the way that I do. That push and pull, that sort of conflict between the old school and the new school is actually one of the best things that baseball has going for them. And it's like, until everyone in the game sort of universally decides that they want to throw the rules out for the last 150 years, I'm good with that. These players should be able to police the game the way that they want. But until they agree upon that, there's going to be plenty of people that feel and act the way that I do.
I think they're less. I don't know if you heard the show yesterday. I said that the last week when I saw Trevor's story, who I think of as being as, and I don't mean this in terms of his perspective, but in terms of his approach, you know, he's a head down guy, run out balls. He's not at all look at me guy. But when he did that dramatic bat flip after hitting the grand slam home run the other day, I was like, man, we are moving to a different place. That's for sure.
Yeah, we sure are.
All right. Let's talk about Jacob deGrom, who I feel smart. I think you feel smart. We picked him for MVP in the National League.
My goodness. In four starts, this guy has 50 strikeouts and allowed one earned run. Randy Johnson is the only other pitcher in history to do that, Buster, in any four-start span. And deGrom obviously did it in his first four starts of a season. And there is perhaps no better illustration of his dominance so far, Buster, than the fact that 25 of his strikeouts have come in the zone and 25 have come out of the zone. It's obviously something of a coincidence, but the point is very simple. He can obviously beat you in any way, and I think he's lining up to have an all-time great season, as you predicted a month ago.
Mike Trout, you and I were texting back and forth yesterday because I looked at his overall numbers and just knowing how Trout has improved during the course of his career, I was thinking yesterday morning, you know what? I bet you a lot of that has to be built on doing better against pitches in the upper half of the strike zone. And sure enough, the numbers you sent me were dramatic in terms of how he's doing against what was once perceived as the kryptonite for him.
Yeah, it was a very astute observation on your behalf. So through 19 games, so it is a small sample, but not an insignificant one. Trout's hitting .350 with a .700 slugging percentage on pitches in the upper half of the zone. Buster, he batted .233 with a .466 slug on those pitches in the first 10 seasons of his career. And his discernment of fastballs in that location has also improved considerably. Here's what I mean. In at-bats ending on upper half fastballs, Trout has 7 walks against only 3 strikeouts. Entering this season, he had 103 more strikeouts than walks in at-bats ending on those pitches. So not only has he honed his swing in such a way, he's beating those pitches to the spot, but he's also passing up more of them that he was swinging through earlier in his career. We'll see if it sticks, but it was really the only hole in his game, if anything. If he's going to be able to cover all four quadrants, he could hit .330 or .340 with his power, could have sort of like DeGrom, an all-time great season at the dish.
A quick follow-up on that. You know, one of the things that really separated Henry Aaron from a lot of his peers was how incredibly productive he was into his late 30s, even into his early 40s. And there are a lot of elements to what Trout does where I'm sitting there watching this between the strike zone recognition, the ability with his short, compact swing to put the ball in play, the fact that he has such elite speed now, probably at the end of his career, while he's not going to have that same speed, he's still not going to be incredibly slow. I'm watching this and I'm thinking, man, this guy's 29. He's already passing the likes of Joe DiMaggio and Pete Rose in career WAR, and he might be a guy who's going to continue, like Henry Aaron, to be productive in his late 30s, early 40s.
I think he's going to go down as the best baseball player to debut in the last 50 years. And I think the point you made about adjusting is an outstanding one. Good hitters adjust game to game. Great hitters adjust at bat to at bat. But all-time great hitters like Mike Trout, you can see making adjustments consistently within at-bats. Pitches that he's fooled on early in at-bats, 3 or 4 pitches later, he's turning those pitches around. You can count on one hand the kind of player that we've seen in our lifetime that consistently do that as well as he does. And it's not a coincidence that he's continuing to get better as he gets older. He's got old man skills. I'm with you. He's not going anywhere anytime soon.
The Yankees clearly are in a period of evaluation. Aaron Boone's not going to say it that way, but they trade Mike Tauchman. They made the decision basically to open up the catching position. It's not Gary Sanchez's moving forward. Tell me about what you're seeing in the Yankees lineup.
I think there's too many good hitters in that lineup for them not to turn it around some. But there is one number in particular that I want you to follow this year as we go. And that number is 115. That's their batting average, Buster, against premium velocity this season. I measured that as 95 plus. As a team, the Yankees are 11 for 96 with 33 strikeouts and at-bats ending on pitches thrown 95 miles per hour or faster. That is absolutely something to monitor late in games against premium bullpen arms, and also something to potentially revisit in the postseason when the average fastball approaches 95. Again, we're talking about a somewhat small sample, and April in New York is not always the best hitting weather. But I've watched enough Yankees at-bats for the season and having all the local games here to be a lot more worried about the lineup than I thought. Like entering the season, I was telling people, you know, the back end of that pitching, the starting rotation is going to determine how many games they win. And that's because I thought that this was a lineup that could score at least 5 runs a game. Right now, they look like something of a one-trick pony. They're not hitting velocity. And parenthetically, you might be surprised to learn that the team that is best handling premium velocity is the Royals, which just so happens to be perhaps the best team in baseball through 1 month.
All right, Hembo, always great talking with you. And, you know, it may turn out to be you're going to be the last person standing on the old school hill.
Yeah, I'm going to be the last voice in the wilderness starving to death. But you know what, Buster? I'm willing to die on that hill. I'm there. I'm willing to die there. Later, boys.
Get out of here, Hembo. Sick of Hembo. Right.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for a Wednesday. We have Max Moreno at Max Moreno 3 right in. And he says, I'm watching Dodgers Reds. Just saw the security guard get in the way of the left fielder on a ball down the line. Do security guards practice getting out of the way on balls down the line? That was a pretty wacky play because you had the one security usher leap into the fans. And I watched that replay over and over again, and I did not realize that there was another usher out there, like, in the middle of the play. They did the awkward, like, you're in the grocery store trying to get around each other, like, who's going which way? That was
I know, and that was funny, too, because it was like the second security guard was trying to get out of the way, but, like, baseball was like a heat-seeking missile and just followed him around the corner as he was carrying a chair, if I remember correctly. Meanwhile, the other security guard dove over the railing. you know, and as I thought, I saw that, and I'm sure that they advised them to, you know, security guards, ball boys, ball girls in other years, they'll say, make sure you don't get in the way. And you can tell people that all you want. The bottom line is it moves so much faster than you realize once you're on field. And that goes for all sports. Remember the 1 year I covered the NFL and I would go to Giants practices and you'd see these, you know, 6'6" guys who weigh 290 pounds. You're like, oh my God, they're so fast. It's certainly that way in baseball too. It's why, you know, when I would go on the field and you watch batting practice and then during the course of the game, they would have some sports writer come in and be the official scorer. And there'd be like this rocket to the third baseman at 115 miles an hour, like skip up, hit the guy in the groin. He's lying in the heap and you hear the sports writer go, error. and you'd be like, dude, do you understand how fast that is and how fast the ball's moving? So, you know, hats off to those security guards who are down the line doing the best they can, even if it doesn't always look so smooth.
It makes me sick both thinking about the physical injury and just like the awkwardness that you'll might never recover from. Like those guys will be laying in bed thinking about that, you know, years down the line. Like,
I think I told this story last week, right? How Mike Messina, like in 2001, and I was a lot younger then, like this is 20 years ago. And he's like, hey, do you want to stand in while I'm throwing BP? And I'm like, no chance, no chance. You're like, this is way too fast for my senses.
Last tweet of the day. We got a couple like this. This one's from Elizabeth Hart at eHart Tweets. She writes in, what do you think of instead of having to confirm or overturn calls, if they go to replay, they just say, this is the play. Tell us what you see. Replay room decides based solely on video evidence and not knowing what call was made. I kind of like this.
Yeah, I like it too, Elizabeth. The one thing that people have mentioned in that case is they would basically put it to the umpire, the replay official, and not tell them what the decision of the umpire was. I don't know how you excise that out because in all the angles, you're probably going to see the reaction of the umpire and reaction from the call. But I agree with you. I think that the instructions to the replay official should change because I think anybody who saw that play in Atlanta with Alec Boehm of the Phillies not touching home plate, or anybody who saw that play with Oakland in Tampa Bay the other day, they would say, yeah, that's not how the call should go. And they would, in Boehm's case, they would have ruled him out. And in Elvis Andrus's case, they would have ruled him safe. I completely agree with you.
I'm imagining a replay official sitting in like a green room, flipping through like a People magazine, not paying attention to games. And then they're like, okay, come on out. You're allowed to see the play now.
Right, exactly. You have a soundproof room like those old game shows.
Right. All right. Thanks for writing in, everyone. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. And please follow, rate, and review this podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
That's it for today. Remember, tomorrow, Sir Charles, Charles Barkley, going to join us and talk about his enjoyment of the Padres and Dodgers. And I also want to ask him about new school versus old school rules. I have a feeling he's going to disagree with what Hembo said today. My thanks to Dave Schoenfield, to Hembo, to Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.